Seven.
Welcome, everyone. I will call to order the Joint Committee on Tax Credits. We have a pretty full agenda today. Just let me give you the outlines of what we have planned. We are going to have work sessions of primarily an informational nature on House Bill 3672 and House Bill 3606. To explain where we are on those bills. We will put off Senate Bill 817 until the later session, because what we're going to do is we're going to have the major amendment for House Bill 3672 available soon, and then we will recess until 4 o'clock to take hopefully final action on that amendment, to give people a chance to look at the amendment, see if there are any technical changes. We now have the Ann Gross House Bill 3606 in front of us, so I think I'll stick with our original plan. So at this time, I will open a work session on House Bill 3606.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3606A is a bill that deals with some remaining technical issues with respect to the old Betsy. So there are just a handful of changes, so it might be best to just walk through those through the bill.
Please do, with help from Representative Bailey if we need it.
Okay, again, just for context, this pertains to the old Betsy program. The first change is on page 2, lines 41 to 43. And you'll see a deletion there pertaining to the timing for when the transferee can hold a credit. The wording is changed, and the deletion there is because it's being moved from ORS Chapter 315 to ORS Chapter 469. So it appears later in the bill, but that's not being deleted from statute. It's just being moved. And that has to do with a rule situation. The Department of Revenue has rulemaking authority for Chapter 315. Chapter 469, the rulemaking authority resides within Department of Energy. Section 2 of the bill on page 3, there are two changes there on lines 29 and 35. Line 29, you'll see the word certified replaced with the word total. As you recall, this credit was created in 1979, and for the vast majority of years, for several decades, the Department of Energy has reduced the total costs by federal grants. Then in this year, they received a ruling from the Attorney General that federal grants should be taken off certified costs. And so on April 18th, they issued a rule to that effect. What this change does is basically say, go back to the way you've been doing it since 1980 and continue doing it that way. That's that clarification, just to continue the way they'd been doing it for years and put that in statute. On line 35 is clarification language or an applicant who's otherwise eligible. Did I say page 35?
No,
page
35. Okay. There, it's just another place where we're putting in statute the current practice, and there was some question about taxpayer, because there are entities who are not taxpayers who take advantage of the credit. They then pass the credit. They sell the credit. And so this just clarifies that these entities are eligible for the credit as well as the low-interest government-sponsored loan programs. Again, just codifying existing practice. And then on the page 4 of the bill, the deletion there, lines 4 through 8, is reworked in the lines below that. So focusing on the bold language, lines 9 through 11 are the language that got deleted earlier in the bill, basically saying that a transferee who gets the credit, the five-year period for the credit begins in the year in which they pay for the credit. This is just a clarification of language that was in House Bill 3680 from 2010. There was some language there pertaining to obtain the credit, and that there created some problems in the rules process. So this just clarifies the intent, the legislative intent of House Bill 3680 from 2010. Lines 12 through 14 or the subsection 2 here pertains largely or pertains to the six-year Betsy's. These were the large renewable Betsy's that were converted to the so-called six-year Betsy, basically the first year of when the year final certification. That is normally when the five-year period starts. For these large renewables, the five-year period would start the year after final certification. There were some obstacles to implementing that via the rules process. And so this is just a clarification of that policy that you adopted in House Bill 3680 from 2010. And we can see that in lines 15 through 17, that the five-year period begins in the following year, the tax year immediately following the tax year during which the completed application for final certification was received. And lines 18 through 20, this just clarifies the timing so that that following year is when the first of the five tax years applies. And then lines 21 through 22 clarify that the final certification will be considered complete without the identification of a transferee. Generally speaking, a final certification is not granted until the transferee is identified. And for these six-year Betsy's, that created an obstacle because if somebody were going to go in and buy a credit, they could either buy a five-year Betsy that could start now or a six-year Betsy that would start next year. They would always buy the five-year Betsy. They wouldn't buy the six-year Betsy. So this just allows a one-year aging of these six-year Betsy's. And again, that was codifying the intent of House Bill 3680. The bill does not have a revenue impact because all of the revenue impacts were in House Bill 3686 in current law. And so that's 3606A that you have before you. You also have a Dash 7 amendment, which provides further clarification. And there, there makes two changes, the Dash 7. Both of those changes are inserted on page 4. And the first one, the subsection 3, the lines 2 through 3 on the Dash A7, just clarify that if an original owner uses any portion of the credit, they can't transfer it midstream. Meaning if a project owner uses the credit for 1, 2, or 3 years, they cannot then transfer it. And this is an intended clarification of the language in 3606A that says the five-year period starts when the transferee pays for the credit. There were some concerns that might open a loophole where somebody could use it for a couple of years and then transfer it, and then the five-year clock would start over again. And then the second change or clarification in the A7, lines 5 through 10, basically don't open the door to going back and opening a pre-cert or final cert that had already been granted this year. So basically, whatever changes get put in here doesn't open the door to, doesn't kind of unring the bell for pre-certs or final certs that had been issued.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Representative Bailey, did you want to add anything to this presentation?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I think Chris did a great job of summing it up. I think this really is a bill that's a cleanup of existing statute and codifying existing practice. I think for at least one of the portions or a couple of the portions of the bill, an analogy outside this committee might be to the homebrew legislation that we passed earlier this session. I'm looking at Representative Vence's face. where we had suddenly an opinion that changed the practice that had been longstanding because somebody went in and looked at the statute finally and actually saw the statute said something different than what the department had been doing. The way it had been done had been working. It's what the market had come to expect, and it's what all of our policy decisions and revenue impacts were based off of. So we're saying let's go back to the way we thought it was, not the way that it was actually technically written.
Well, I want to thank you, and I'm sure on behalf of the whole committee, for taking this on. This has been quite a wonkish effort, complicated subject matter, so I appreciate you taking this on. Are there questions from the committee? Representative Berger.
I have to make a comment here. I heard Chris say at least three times that the intent, that this provisions of this bill codify the intent of House Bill 3680 from 2010. I fully expect that next winter we're going to be sitting here saying that we're codifying the intent of 3672. I just want it on the record.
ahead of the curve, as always.
That's just an impasse, Madam Chair.
But then it's heavy lifting, and we do it, and we can do it, Madam Chair, and we should do it, and thank you, Representative, for taking this on.
Representative Brewer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for staff. On the Dash 7 amendments, the amendments starting at line 5, can you explain this applicability date? I want to make sure that it is not in conflict with the intent of this bill of 3606, specifically that we are going back and trying to do a technical fix for our legislative intent, and I'm wondering if you can explain that to me.
Representative Brewer, the intent here was, as the Department of Energy was grappling with the AG opinion and going through the certification process, the pre-cert and final cert, this basically keeps that, doesn't open the door for somebody to come back and say, well, the pre-cert should have been different for this reason or the final cert should have been different for that reason. It just keeps that, it just doesn't open that door.
If I might follow up.
Please follow up.
That seems to me in conflict with the main purpose of this, with the main purpose of 3606. But I'm not technically proficient in this area, and I'm wondering if there might be anybody in the audience who has some. I honestly just saw this, but I'd like to. This Dash 7 is new. I think this is potentially a significant issue for this bill, and I would like to at least have a discussion about it, get some clarification on it. It does make me concerned.
We're not going to take action on this bill now. And so we can you've sent out the message that you would like
I would like some feedback
discussion
on this applicability
so
date.
When we take this up at 4 o'clock, we will give you an opportunity.
Thank you so much.
Okay, other questions, comments? Okay, thank you, Chris. With that, we will close the work session on House Bill 3606 and open a work session on House Bill 3672. Is Representative Smith in the audience? Okay, Chris, go ahead. Just do your best.
Okay.
The dash three and the big one. Start with the dash three.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you have a dash three and a dash six. The dash six is the big version. It's the revised version that the committee discussed yesterday. The dash three amendment pertains to a program called the Oregon Investment Advantage Program, and it also changes the sunset date of that program. What that program does is it provides an income tax exemption for businesses in small communities where the county meets certain criteria. Generally speaking, the county has to have high unemployment, a high unemployment rate, or a low per capita income to be a qualified county, and then within those counties, businesses that are in cities of, I think, less than 15,000 are eligible for an income tax exemption for 10 years. Now, the way the program has worked is that there have been certain criteria in place for tax years 2006 through 2010 where the county had to either have high unemployment or low per capita income. And in beginning January 1, 2011, the statute, the requirements changed so that you had to have high unemployment and low per capita income.
Okay. Representative Smith, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you for allowing me to come and testify on behalf of the Oregon Investment Advantage Program. For the record, I'm Oregon State Representative Greg Smith. And I have the distinct pleasure of representing District 57, which includes Union, Wallowa, Umatilla, and Morrow County, for another 18 months, and then it'll change a little bit. Colleagues, very quickly, I just want to share just some brief background with you. About 3 weeks ago, I received a contact from Gary Neal, who's the general manager at the Port of Morro, who is sharing with me that he has been contacted by a major company who is looking at coming to the Port of Morro and making over a $100 million investment and creating almost 600 construction jobs and numerous permanent full-time positions. The company, however, is not only looking at Oregon, they're also looking at Washington and Nevada and California. And they were very clear, saying, we want to participate in the Oregon Investment Advantage Program. So the Port of Morro, in partnership with our office, we contacted the Business Oregon. We shared with them this concern, and they shared with us a equal desire to try and renew this program. As you folks know, several terms back, in a bipartisan manner, the legislature created this program, providing an income tax holiday for those companies who are going to locate in our rural, economically distressed counties. What this program does is it requires a company who's going to come into Oregon to create at least 5 new full-time jobs. It requires them to be coming from out of state, and it requires that this be the first type of business in the state of Oregon. So it can't be a duplicative type process. What the amendments to House Bill 3672 do is two things. First of all, it moves the sunset that is about to occur to July 1st, 2016. And then second, it does something that the department and myself think is very innovative, and that is it requires the company to locate in Oregon and to begin paying income tax for the first 2 years of operation to show their desire and their commitment to be in Oregon. And then after fulfillment of that requirement, then they'd be eligible for the holiday benefit that this body, if should they approve, would be available to them. Colleagues, very quickly, as we look around this session and we try and identify those bills that are going to help build our economy, I can look you all in the eye and say, this is a bill that will help rural Oregon, not just in eastern Oregon, but down in southern Oregon and on the coast. Colleagues, I want you to know I appreciate the good work of all three of our co-chairs. They've been absolutely excellent to work with on this issue and to allow this discussion to occur. And so I appreciate your consideration.
Questions from the committee? Thank you for bringing this to us. Questions from the committee? Comments? Okay. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Did you have questions? Representative Berger.
Yes. It is my understanding that by the moratorium, if you will, the requirement that they come and actually be here for 2 years, this then would remove any fiscal that would be added to this amendment in this coming biennium.
Yeah, Madam Co-Chair, there currently is no fiscal on this. This would eliminate the revenue impact.
The revenue impact.
Yeah, sorry, I'm a ways and means guy.
Yeah, so this amendment has no revenue impact on the main bill if it is attached.
That is correct, Madam Co-Chair, and it instills in these companies that are looking to come to Oregon that we're serious about them being here and being a permanent neighbor in our communities.
And it is directed, as you stated, at those communities that are rural and most desperate in terms of unemployment.
Yes, Madam Co-Chair.
A very good program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just for curiosity, have you actually talked to any potential people and found out how the 2-year waiting period would be perceived among people who are considering us?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair. I've had an opportunity to talk with this company that is looking at coming mm-hmm. to the state of Oregon, and they feel very comfortable with this requirement.
Okay. So, thank you. All right. Thank you, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you, colleagues.
Chair.
Yes, Senator Morris.
Are these tax credits transferable? Chris?
Senator Morse, it's not transferable. It's an exemption from the income tax.
It's an exemption. Okay.
It's not an income tax credit.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you.
So they get the full benefit of the incentive rather than having to take a discount.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Okay. This is the time in the session when meetings are called with no notice, and Senator Hass and I are subject to one of those meetings. So at this point, I will turn the gavel over to my honorable co-chair.
Thank you, Madam. Madam Co-Chair.
Who will do the really hard part.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think at this point, everyone has a copy of the latest amendments to House Bill 3672. So, Chris, would you start going through and highlighting what is in this bill at this point?
Madam Chair, would you like me to go through the changes that we went through yesterday?
Yes, and summarize so that, because we are very close to finish here, let's get it all out there. And committee members, please feel free to interrupt with any clarifications that you folks need or questions that you have that we can get back to you.
Okay. Section 1, language that was added here is on page 2, lines 3 through 5, and adds the requirement or the condition that the final let me back up a little bit. This is the section that ends the existing Betsy except for the manufacturing. And so sub A to the projects that would continue to get the old Betsy, they would have to file for application for pre-cert before April 15, 2011, and receive preliminary certification before July 1, 2011, and either receive final certification by January 1, 2013, which is a six-month extension of that deadline, or demonstrate they had begun construction before April 15, 2011. The idea here was to get at folks who had already broken ground, so to speak, and have the project underway and might not actually finish the project and receive final certification even with the six-month extension. So those requirements would have to be met for somebody to get credit under the old Betsy. Section 2, the next couple of sections deal with the biomass credit. A change there is on page 3, lines 20 through 22. It adds oilseed processor. This is essentially a policy that was discussed in Senate Bill 620. And then on page 4, there's a technical change to the timing of the credit on lines 4 through 6. That was also part of Senate Bill 620. Section 3 is the green to bone dry ton. One change here from the prior version is that on lines 12 through 13, the yard debris and municipally generated food waste have been removed from the credit.
We took the garbage out of the bill. Okay, we've got to have a little fun here.
We'll be here all week.
Sorry.
Section 4 is the fire insurance credit. No change there. Section 5 is the e-commerce zone. Section 6 is the long-term rural enterprise zone. No change in this version. And then the next few sections 7, 8, 8A, and 9 are the research and development credit. On page 10, in section 10, tried to clarify the applicability clause for the changes related to the research and development credit. And so on subsection 1, there's section 2A. Basically, section 2 got split. There's 2A.
Section, we're on page
11.
Yeah, I'm also looking at this for the first time. Section 8 and 8A got split. So that in Section 8, there was a concern about the applicability of the cap decrease from $2 million to $1 million. The way that was handled is Section 8 now just contains the change from $2 million to $1 million, and Section 8A has the only change is the language about the deduction not being allowed for credit amounts. So then the applicability in Section 10, we have Sections 8 and 9 being applicable to tax years beginning after on or after January in 2012. Oh, Sections 2A and 3 are the biomass credit. So it clarifies that those are applicable beginning January in 2012. And then subsection 2 of Section 10 refers to the deduction credit language, and the applicability there is going forward in any open years. The next several sections deal with the film and video credit.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Section 10, subsection 2, 8A deals with the add back, but I think, again, looking at this language, to clarify again that it's all existing years, not just section 8A doesn't just apply to the to 2012 and forward. It applies to any and all years, even years where the credit was generated before. Can you verify? Can you point out to me in the language that is made clear in this section?
I think we get there by the first part of subsection 2, applying to taxes beginning on or after January 1, 2012. So that's moving forward. And the rest of the language, any tax year for which a return is subject to audit or adjustment by DOR or the effective date of this act, and any tax year for which a return is subject to an appeal on or after, and then any tax year for which a claim a refund. I think it's my understanding is that it's worded that way just for any time a tax return is opened or audited and gets worked on, it's that way. But if a return is for a closed year, it's not going to be opened just for this.
So just to clarify that on the language, this act isn't effective yet, and we have an audit going on. So an audit just started yesterday, and this act isn't effective. That taxpayer then, we have not, by this language, taken it so that that taxpayer doesn't have to do the add back. In that scenario, this language doesn't somehow make that a moot situation.
In that case, well, this codifies what the Department of Revenue has been doing. So, right. If they opened a return yesterday, this bill doesn't apply to that just yet. But in that process, they would make that adjustment.
I understand. I appreciate that. I just wanted to make sure and establish for the record that this language does not remove the ability to do that. That somehow
Correct.
This language doesn't create, by
Right.
negative inference, something going on.
Right.
Just for the record. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Section 11, the film and video. The change here, in the prior version, there was what's called a double amendment, and it had to do with the effect of that was the film and video credit was reduced to $6 million for the upcoming fiscal year. The way this language should work is that come this July, they will be eligible for the current law, $7.5 million in credits, and also they would not be subject, they wouldn't sell those credits via an auction. Both of the $6 million cap and the auction would begin in the second fiscal year.
Question?
Yes.
Thank you. Does this include the provision that allows the Ways and Means process to buy back the credit? If so, could they do that for this coming year?
Representative Barnhart, that would be on the language there is on page 14, section 13. And let's see. So the question there would be the applicability of section 13.
I have no idea whether Ways and Means has that plan, but it would be nice to give them the option.
Okay.
Well, it
it says that it is part of the end of each fiscal year.
Yeah, I think the language, the intent of Section 13 is there. What I'm looking for is an applicability of Section 13 specifically, and I'm not able to put my eyes right on that.
We will.
But we can look into that.
We will. A good point. We will put it on a list of things to assure.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Other changes were, those are the changes from the last version of the bill.
Remember, Chris has seen this for the first time, too.
Yes, so I understand.
Okay, then moving in onto page 23, we have the renewable energy, the Jenny. Some of the language change on page 25, lines 14 and 15. That was a change from the prior version. Just a clarification. Basically, that subsection 5 states that the credit's non-refundable. Changes. There's a change to the definition of cost on lines 28 through 30. The language that's new there is on line 30, the before considering utility incentives. New language.
Okay. 26 on the bottom.
Yep. Okay. And then on page 27, at the top lines 1 through 4, the definition of renewable energy production system. On line 3 contains the word biogas. That was added to the definition.
I won't make the comment that we took out garbage and added biogas. Okay.
continuing down on page 27, line 19 is new language, that the system be located in Oregon.
Yes.
We received some feedback on the $250,000 limit on grants under the Jenny, and I wanted to just comment briefly on that for the committee on sort of why that number is in there. And that the intention behind that number was that although I think we recognize that there are probably good projects under 35 megawatt nameplate capacity to meet all the other criteria that could probably benefit from a larger grant, that what we really have here is a pilot program at $3 million for the biennium, and we're trying to make sure that the system works, that the auction works, to get a sense of how this new program works going forward. And to do that, we need a sample size, and we need to ensure that we have enough grants to go around to more than just one project or more than just a couple projects. And our hope is that we'll be able to get out to a number of projects through this method and spread it a little bit around, as opposed to just having it all eaten up by one project.
Thank you.
So next, on page 29, line 4, the within 12 months is new length, or it was a change from 6 months in the prior version. was it for the Jenny, I think.
We may not get through it all. Just hit the highlights.
Okay.
People can read it in detail.
Yeah. Okay. There were changes to the projects related to the lead on page 32. The main change here is on lines 12 through 14. It limits the scope. The projects that are, new construction or a total building retrofit, then they must achieve energy efficiency related to the standards in capital A through capital D. Not that they actually have to receive those certifications, but they have to have that level of energy efficiency.
Okay. We have made this point before. It is our intent to have standards here that are understandable, and that's why we reference the standards here. But you don't have to have the certification of those standards. You just have to apply those standards to be a qualified project in under this. Yes, Representative, would you want to elaborate on that? Because this is something that we've seen some misunderstanding around.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I think that's exactly right, and that, again, the intent here is to limit this to entire buildings, to total building retrofits and to new construction where we're getting into those large construction projects. There are other standards in the bill around exceeding code, around the three-year payback period that apply to individual measures. Those would all still qualify without having to meet the energy efficiency standard for LEED Platinum. So there's essentially a couple of tracks here. You can either A, do the individual measures and meet the requirements that are in this bill, or B, if you are doing an entire building retrofit or a new construction, then we're asking that you meet the energy efficiency level that's outlined here. Still open to feedback on that.
Our intent here is to have standards that are recognizable, but to also so that a big project has a known standards, but the individual smaller projects don't have to meet all of these standards, just the part that the furnace or the insulation or whatever part that is applicable there are standards specified. Okay? I hope I'm probably not confusing things rather than making things clear, but we are trying to actually make things easier, not more difficult. Whether we're getting there or not.
Okay, the next highlight on page 35, section 39. This is the prioritization for the CONI. The tiered language has been deleted. So it is no longer, you won't see that on page 35, section 39. You may notice its absence. One policy that has been added is there on line 21, and it calls out energy savings that benefit a party other than the owner. The next change from the prior version on the bottom of page 38 going on to page 39. So page 38, line 30. This language was added, and this is for this subsection 6 that starts on page 38 is the policy that a pre-cert exists for 3 years and only 3 years. And on line 30 there, it deals with pre-certifications that would be outstanding on June 30th of this year, and states that gives them that 3-year time horizon starting July 1st, 2011. So they would expire whether or not a pastor partner was identified by July 1, 2014. So that's an extension for many of those folks. But it's consistent with that 3-year window frame. Backing up on page 38, subsection 5, lines 15 through 22, would allow the director of the Department of Energy to waive pre-certification under certain conditions. Basically, if the cost, if the project cost is less than $20,000, that's on line 18. And then paragraphs B and C provide other sideboards for that. But the idea, the policy here is the small projects can move forward without a pre-certification process. And I think
somebody's
that's...
phone?
Sounds like it. And that was it for the county, at least the big changes. A couple things on the tranny, page 47, the definition of transportation project on line 29. The word private was removed. And on line 30, the word transit used to say transportation. And so in addition on to this definition on page 48, there's a reference to state or federal funding for the services. And also, without pointing to specific language, there was clawback provisions added to be consistent for the training and the conservation for the Department of Energy if the projects didn't meet the requirements. And then in the RETC, there's some clarification language on, let's see.
Page 64.
On 64, the definition of the appliances that are eligible was tweaked a little bit.
And Chris, I think, I'm sorry, Madam Kutcher.
Yes.
I think on section 69,
page
57, 2C. At the bottom of the page in bold, I think there was an intention to take out that bolded language.
Okay. 30 cents per dwelling unit.
That was, I believe, a holdover from another policy bill that got rashed in.
What, the 27, that language is not...
We were line 27 through 30 on that page, under line 1 on the
that?
Next page. I think so.
From Senate Bill, the language came from Senate Bill 688.
I don't think is applicable anymore.
Okay. And then the next major thing, I think it was the definition of the not the definition of the third-party installers for RETC. Had to do with the language that they would be required to come in for pre-certification of up to 25 at a time.
Page 65. No.
That's the definition.
Page 7.
And it was not intended to be a limit of 25 per year. It's just 25 pre-certs, a limit of the number that can be pre-certed at any one time.
Thank you, Chris. Members of the committee, for those interested parties, I think that if you see a policy that you have mentioned before and it has changed or hasn't changed, you can assume it's the will of the committee that that is the policy that we have agreed on, if I could put it delicately that way. technical things that you see that are of a serious nature, we certainly want to hear about. But I believe we have sort of landed somewhere, and is our intention to move this as a policy later on today after the committee and all of us have had a better chance to digest it, and Chris has a few numbers to crunch rather importantly. So since we only have one committee member left, I'm going to invite her to add whatever questions she has to the list or clarifications that she needs or any other committee members. And as I said, if you, it is not that we are no longer inviting comment. We are looking for technicalities at this point because I think we have pretty much landed on our policy decisions. Wouldn't you say, Mr. Co-Chair?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair.
And appreciate your attention. It's wonderful to have such an attentive audience, and we all have more to do. So with that, I think I will close the public hearing on, or a work session on House Bill 3672. Hold over our committee.
We're going to reconvene.
Okay, we will be in recess as a committee until later this afternoon. Thank you.
I will call the Senate Committee on Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures to order. It's been a very long day. So we are reaching the home stretch on House Bill 3672, and so I will turn to Chris for a discussion on where we are and where we need to be.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. We do not have a dash 7 right now. There were a number of technical fixes that we've spoken with Ledge Council about, and they're currently working on that. new information you have in front of you is related to the revenue impacts. And so you have a handout entitled Policies Contained in House Bill 3672-6. And this is kind of a I've been working on this up until about 15 minutes ago, so excuse any typos and so forth. But this is provides kind of a section-by-section outline, or at least where certain policies reside in the bill by section, group of section. And then the main piece of information on here is the revenue impact piece over in the right-hand columns. And oddly enough, the net revenue impact for 2011-13 is minus $10 million.
That is amazing.
But I can walk through the different. Would you like me to walk through each of the pieces here?
Yes, please do.
Section 1, the sunset of the existing Betsy, and that has to do with all of the policies that are in the dash 6. Section 1, the extension of the 6 months on final cert and ending the program now in terms of pre-cert and application, the dates that they're in the dash 6, and the net impact for that is the $19.8 million, 11-13. So that's a revenue raiser. It basically ends the program for the most part earlier than under current law, and all of that activity under current law is what's in the May forecast that you were presented last month. So ending it earlier raises revenue that is then spent in this bill. Then moving down each of the policies, the next line is the biomass credit. And moving from green ton to bone dry ton effectively cuts the impact in half. So that's a $3.9 million revenue loss. The fire insurance credit, the committee heard before, it's the revenue loss is just under $1 million. And then the e-commerce zone credit is a revenue loss of about $100,000. The long-term rural enterprise zone also has a small revenue loss, but the nature of that estimate is a little bit different than the others in that it's kind of the way I arrived at that estimate is kind of an expected value. This is a tax credit that, I guess, 90% chance of zero impact. And a 5, 10, or 1% chance of a much higher revenue impact. So basically, if it hits, it can be several million dollars, but the odds of it hitting are relatively small in terms of that big fashion. So it's not one where there's a lot of history on the use of the credit, if that makes sense. The research and development credit extension and the reduction from $2 million to $1 million for the cap is a revenue loss of about $800,000. Most of that has to do with small claimants. You have smaller corporations who will use the credit on a regular basis and can, for the most part, use it up every year. They don't have large carry forwards. This is a credit that overall only about 10% of the credit gets used. In the most recent year on the corporation side, corporations are the one that claimed that about $60 million was claimed and $6 million was used. So there are large carry-forwards, but there are a number of smaller corporations that use a good chunk of that or are able to use it on an annual basis. The next one, the film and video credits, and just to be clear, the way I've described that there might not be exactly right. Under the current fiscal year, they would still get the $7.5 million, and the $6 million is just the second year of the biennium. The revenue loss there is the $6.2 million. That's pretty much the credit itself, and then a little bit for the Greenlight rebate program. Then the fish screening device is very small. It's generally less than $50,000. So here it's about $30,000 in 11-13. Sections 19 to 21 are sections that don't have any of the policies. They're just statutory language. I just included that in there to avoid questions about what happened to sections 19 through 21.
He knows us too well.
And then we get to the new Betsy's children, I guess.
After euthanizing
Betsy, this is her legacy.
Betsy's Hydra children.
The first one there is.
Are we talking inheritance tax now?
This is Jenny at the $3 million. This would be the pre-sale of the credit, and it would be grants. And I have that revenue impacted $2.5 million. And the reason for the difference there is a lot of times the credits aren't fully utilized in that same year. It's kind of that same concept. That's why the number's a little bit less than the $3 million. That general policy usually applies. It just stands out here with such a small credit. Then the next one, the Connie cap, is at $28 million per biennium with a revenue impact at 11-13 of $5.5 million. And I will point out, this was the final lever in terms of getting to the $10 million, not to reveal any secrets, I suppose, but that's how the $10 million was arrived at, because that was the lever, and that's why it's $28 million, kind of an odd number, not a round number. And then we have the transportation with a cap of $20 million, and that revenue impact is $2.3 million. One thing to point out in comparing the Connie and the Tranny and the revenue impacts, you'll notice that the Connie grows at about triples from 11-13 to 13-15, whereas the Tranny only doubles. That's generally because I think the committee is familiar with how the kind of stacking of the Betsy credits goes. With the Tranny, there's a phase-out of that for transportation providers, so that prevents that credit from increasing dramatically in the next biennium. And then the last piece is the extension of the RETSI credit, and that's at $7.6 million for 11-13. So the net impact there is the $10 million. One thing to point out, and you can see in 13-15, the revenue impact grows to about $55 or $56 million. But to provide some context for that, there was a table that I had provided before that showed the revenue impacts of just continuing all the tax credits for the three biennia. And in 11-13, that cost would have been $40 million, but that got dampened down to the $10 million. And then for 13-15, the cost of extending all of those credits was $170 million. So basically, you've gone from a cost of $170 million in 13-15 to a cost of $56 million with the work that the committee has done this session on this bill.
Would you repeat that? You've gone from...
In the handout here, the impact for 13-15 is $56 million.
Right. And what would it have been?
If you had just instead extended the sunset on all of the credits under your and in front of you, the cost would have been $170 million.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And just to be clear on that, then as we look forward, because of the caps and because of the additional sunset, again, of these programs, what we're not looking at is that exponential growth curve across the board here that led to some of the runaway problems that we saw in the past. Is that right?
That's correct. The caps really put a lid on those. A lot of it, the renewables had gone, is going from, I think as everybody's aware, a $300 million biennium credit program to a $3 million program. So there's a lot there. And then Connie now has a cap for the first time. There was no cap on the conservation credit before. So that prevents that exponential growth.
Senator Hess.
Thank you. Did you say $170 million in the 11-13 or 13-15?
13-15. I'd say that's a substantial bending of the cost curve. Other questions of Chris? Okay. I think what we have here is the final. We've got some technical tweaks that are going to occur overnight, and hopefully we should be able to get this put to bed tomorrow morning when we meet at 9 o'clock. So is there any other, Paul, do we need to accomplish anything else here? Okay, well, again, thank you all for your patience and your diligence. This is a crowded hearing room, and we will adjourn till 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.